is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey Hoop Heads, this December our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are offering $1,000 off and two free basketballs with a Dr. Dish home purchase. Plus, all their commercial models are $2,500 off this month. Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. You can also check out their holiday gift guide if you're shopping for the ball player in your life.
This is Kip Ione, head men's basketball coach at Willamette University, founder of Teams of Men, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are jumping on to talk some NBA after a few technical snafus and also vocabulary snafus, but we are on Zoom tonight, so if our audio sounds a little bit different than it normally does, that is why. We are having some trouble with our program that we normally use, and we may be switching programs. We'll have to see if we can figure out what's going on with the audio or whether it's just my internet at home.
Always count on Mike for some inside baseball.
There you go. There's always something going on here. Yeah. So, all right. Are we going to start? Do you have a game for me? Are we starting?
I have a win shares today, Mike.
All right.
I have a win shares.
All right. Let's go win shares, and then we got to talk some Zion.
All right. That sounds like a plan, Mike. So, my win shares for you is a really exciting one. The Orlando Magic.
All right.
And I'm going to just give you a little hint. Bol Bol is not on the list.
He's not on there? Markelle Fultz?
He's also not on there. So
not on the list?
Not on the list.
Okay, so we have to go Dwight Howard.
Dwight Howard is number one.
We have to go Shaq.
Shaq is number four.
We have to go Penny.
Penny is number six.
Ooh, we have to go Nick Anderson.
Nick Anderson is number two.
We have to go Dennis Scott.
Dennis Scott is number Dennis Scott is number 11.
All right, so I have.
You have Dwight at one. You have Nick Anderson at two. You have Shaq at four.
Penny at six.
Penny's at six.
Man. Now it gets tough. I don't even know if I can. I don't know what I can come up with the Magic.
Oh, come on, yeah. Mike. Come on.
Hedo Turkoglu.
Oh, Hedo. He's 10.
10. Rashard Lewis.
He's 12.
Right now, I'm going to be pushing the bottom of the barrel here.
One of the guys is still in the league, Mike.
One of the guys is still in the league?
He was traded away from the Orlando Magic.
Traded from the Orlando Magic, still in the league. Did he play with the Dwight Howard Magic?
Nope.
No.
He plays for the Bulls currently.
Vucevic?
Vucevic. He's number three.
Really?
Really?
Wow.
Bruce Smith is number three.
So I'm missing number five.
You're missing number five. He has a cousin that's also been was in the NBA. He's famous.
Horace Grant?
Oh. I don't know. Does Horace Grant have a cousin in the NBA?
Maybe. I don't know. He's got a brother. He's got a
Horace Grant was number eight.
He's got a nephew.
This guy played he would probably be a top 10 player in NBA history if he hadn't hurt his back so many times.
Grant Hill.
No, that would be a foot. His back.
Bad back. Played for the Orlando Magic. Oh, Tracy McGrady.
There you go.
I should have been able to get that one. That one eluded me. It should have.
The Vucevic one, I understand, because I would have never thought that he was up there. But
I mean, I guess from a longevity standpoint, but it doesn't feel like they've won enough in the quote Vucevic era. But yeah, Tracy McGrady's one I should have got.
Yeah. Rashard Lewis was 12. The only name you didn't, there's two names you didn't say. Jameer Nelson, he was 7.
Okay.
And Daryl Armstrong was 9.
Daryl Armstrong. Nice. All right. Well, that's not a bad list for the Orlando Magic, in all honesty.
All right. So now that we've wrapped up your Orlando Magic win shares, we're going to talk some NBA, and we're going to start with Mike's favorite person in the NBA right now. Would you say that's a fair assessment? Is he your favorite player in the NBA right now to watch? Would you say that Zion Williamson is your favorite player, Mike?
It would be hard for me to say that he's not, I think. I guess if I had to pick a guy just based on past pedigree and kind of what he's done, I still probably Giannis is probably still right there, but man, Zion is, I think he's close. He's close. And the way he's playing over the last 10 games or so, there's nobody better. I know I've been saying it for whatever, 3 years since he's been in the league. But when he's played, he's been historically great. I mean, he's been as good as any of the all-time great players in the league during the time when he's played. And he's just right now is a force of nature. He's a guy that nobody can stay in front of, even though you know that 80% of the time he's going to his left hand or he's going to spin back to his left. He's so strong. He's so explosive. He's shooting 60% from the field. He's passing the ball. You got point Zion back because Ingram's been out, so the ball's been in Zion's hands probably more than it will be in the idealized version maybe of the Pelicans, which, again, makes you think that is that the right version of the team? Can those guys coexist and make it work and maximize what each of them can be? I still think they probably can, but – you can clearly see that when the ball is in Zion's hands, good things happen. And teams just have no way of dealing with this guy. He's too fast and explosive for bigger guys, and he's too strong and explosive for smaller guys.
Yep.
He just gets what he wants at any point on the floor. And I think the thing is that New Orleans, everybody knew kind of coming into the season that offensively that this was going to be a really, really good team. You got Ingram, you got Zion, you got Valanciunas, you got CJ McCollum, and you got four really good offensive players. I think the question was on the defensive end of the floor. And to this point, up until tonight, where they lose to the Jazz by 21, but they've been a top five defense, which I think is something that nobody expected. And Zion's been better than he's probably ever been in his NBA career defensively. Now that's not saying a whole lot, but if he can be an average defender with his athleticism and the way he moves on the floor, he's been getting in passing lanes. He's been blocking more shots. He's been more active. And if you get that version of Zion and you combine that with what he can do and what this team can do offensively, I mean, there's a reason why they've been climbing up towards the top of the Western Conference and finally got there. Now, we can debate the merits of whether this team's ready to make a finals run. I think still that's obviously debatable, but where they are now
in the conversation though, Mike.
Yeah. Right. I mean, right. The conversation comes back to like it does with every team. If they're healthy, if this team's healthy, nobody is going to want to play Zion in a 7-game series. They're just not. That guy is no fun to guard, and nobody's been able to figure him out yet. And when he's been on the floor, he's been right there statistically with the greatest players in the history of the league in terms of what he does statistically when he's on the court. And you and I have documented it. We've made a bet on it as to how many games he's going to play and how healthy
he's at 100. He's at 106 now, Mike. He's almost halfway there.
He's got to get to what? What did we say? 250?
I said 250.
250.
Yeah.
Look, could he go down tomorrow with a broken foot? Absolutely. But when he plays, it's hard to imagine that there are 5 better players in the league than him. He's that good.
So coming into tonight, so here are Zion's last 6 games. He went 33-10, 5, and 80%. He went 30-15, 8 on 64%. He went 25-6, 4, and 53% shooting. 29-10, and 5, 68% shooting. He went 35-7, and 4, 76% shooting. He went 35-8, 3 on 66% shooting. And then tonight he went 26-9, and 5, and I don't know what percent shooting he was. He was – oh, the NBA app's not cooperating. Oh, here we go. 10 of 16 from the field. So quick math, that's 5 of 8. That's 62.5% from the field, Mike. That's some pretty darn good stat lines right there.
Yeah, and the thing is –
those are what I was going to call MVP stat lines, Mike. MVP caliber stat lines.
No question. If they stay at or near the top of the standings and he continues to play this way – he's got to be right there in the MVP discussion. I don't think there's any doubt about that. If he can keep them at the top of the Western Conference, he's going to be right there. And he's been, like I said, unbelievable over this last stretch of games. And he's historically good when he's on the floor. And that's the bottom line. What do you think about the dunk, the 360 dunk at the end of the game? What's your take?
Probably wasn't necessary.
Probably wasn't necessary, but if you're the Phoenix Suns, are you taking that much exception to it? Are you really?
Well, the way that Chris Paul's been elbowing people and being kind of not necessarily what I would say the best, I don't know what, sportsman, I would say I wouldn't really have a fight on it.
So you're blaming it on Chris Paul's lack of sportsmanship or Zion's lack of sportsmanship?
I'm going to blame it on Chris Paul because I want to blame Chris Paul.
That sounds fair to me. So I don't really have a problem with the dunk in and of itself, whatever. If you're Zion and you dunk that, I guess if you're the Suns, you can get mad. I guess if you're Chris Paul, you can be angry and not like it, but whatever. I don't have a big problem with it. It feels like if that's something that's really going to make you mad, that there's some unwritten code that you don't do that, fine. But if you're the Pelicans, I don't think you worry about it. If you're Zion, I don't think you worry about it. I don't think it was unsportsmanlike. It feels like at the end of the game, if you're running out the clock, somebody wants to shoot the ball, whatever. I don't really care. It doesn't really bother me that much.
Okay. I mean, it's fair. It's fair. I think and once again, if you want to really get down to brass tacks here, okay. The dude, Chris Paul, has done some shady things in his career. And I'm like, listen, did I send you that video of the guy who broke down all the Chris
Paul? Yeah, it's good stuff.
Good, isn't it? Like,
yeah, it's good. It's really good.
All the things that Chris Paul. Yeah, so.
In the lab.
I don't know.
Same guy with the Morant video.
Yeah. The Morant video was hilarious. We need to fix the NBA.
Yeah, there was a ton of that. There was a ton of that. Carrying and traveling and whatever. Although I will say the league's trying to crack down on that a little bit, which is probably a good thing. When you watch guys actually dribble the ball, and you can extend that to college basketball and even high school basketball, when you watch what guys do with the ball compared to what guys could do with the ball back 30 years ago when I was playing, it's not even comparable. I mean, everything that players do today would have immediately been whistled back in the time that I was playing. I'm sure it's a lot easier to blow by a guy when you can basically carry the ball in the palm of your hand for a second and then either pick the ball up or keep on dribbling. It's got to be a lot tougher as a defender to read what the guy's going to do. So
yeah.
I'm glad to see him cracking down on that a little bit.
Yeah. It's a breath of fresh air, you know, like just trying to fix some stuff. Although I will say there's a difference in my opinion of cracking down on it. And I don't know what game I was watching and it wasn't a Cavs game. Like they literally called like 10 travels in a quarter. And I'm like, okay guys, listen, I'm okay with you calling it, but we don't need to like nitpick.
If you're going to call it, you got to call it, right? I mean, that's the dilemma, is if you're going to try to really make a meaningful change in how guys dribble the basketball, then you can't call it one out of every 30 times that somebody does it. You kind of got to crack down at least a little bit more frequently to get it done. Now, I'm not saying I want the game to be filled with travels and carrying violations, but at the same time, I do think that that's a huge offensive advantage when you can dribble and hold that ball in the palm of your hand for a half second or a full second, and then suddenly accelerate out of that move. So I don't want to watch games where every trip down the floor, there's a travel, but by the same token, if that is a point of emphasis with the league, which it seems like at this point it is, then you got to call it probably more frequently than fans and coaches and players would like. Let's put it that way.
The first training camp Elite Skill Development and Performance Combine will be held on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, powered by Unleash Potential and the Hoopheads podcast. The camp is designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 29th through July 1st, 2023. An emphasis on improving individual skills in the context of a team environment will be the hallmark of the training camp. Mike Klinzing from Head Start Basketball and the Hoopheads podcast and Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential will serve as the camp directors of this inaugural training camp. Campers can expect 3 days of hard work, intense skill instruction, and learning how to be a great teammate on and off the court at the training camp. Players will participate in 10 elite skill development sessions led by some of the best coaches from across the country. Visit headstartbasketball.com to get registered.
All right. So the next thing we're going to talk about is we're going to talk about the Cavs, Mike. And I don't want us to prolong this because we talk about the Cavs quite frequently. Obviously, they have the best record in the NBA when it comes to playing at home. They are pitiful on the road. The game last night, they had no business losing the game to the Spurs. It's embarrassing. It's not like Donovan Mitchell didn't play. He played. And what's all – once again, I was talking to a coworker at school today, and they were like, oh, but they almost came back. I'm like, they should have never been in that position. Should have never been in that position. And I don't know. Like, here's what I want to say. I think there are some things they need to fix. I think that we're starting – I don't know how much you're paying attention to the Cavs Twitterverse and the radio. We're turning into Browns fans and saying that we need to make changes right away. I'm not willing to say that changes need to be made. Like, people are trying to ship Kevin Love off right now. I don't know. Did you know this? Did you know this, Mike?
I don't know what you're going to get for Kevin Love. And he's been hurt, and he's been an important part when he's played, and he's played well. He's been an important part of what they're trying to do. And I would not be in a hurry to chip off Kevin Love. I don't know what you could really get for him. Maybe you get a guy that positionally makes more sense. Maybe you get a guy on the wing, but I don't think you get a difference maker for Kevin Love. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know what's out there that you could get for him.
Yeah. Listen, I'm just saying, like I said, like I'm hearing this, people talk about this and I'm like, wait a second. Like what are you getting for him? Like, you're not, and just because, you know, he isn't the reason we're losing these games, Mike. He's not the reason, right? It's not fair to blame him.
I look at last night and I'm trying to figure out what the reason is or who the reason is that you don't win that game. And I guess that when you look at it, Cavs shot 5 for 23 from 3-point land. So I'm pretty sure that if you go and you look through all the games being played in the NBA this year, that teams that make five threes in a game probably don't win too many of those games, if I had to guess.
What?
If you just look individually, there wasn't, I think, okay, so Lamar Stevens starts, plays 25 minutes, doesn't take a shot. I think that tells you that there's a problem with that spot. Now, LeVert had a good game, shot the ball well, and did some good.
Here's the other – here, let me just tell you this much, Mike. I saw someone saying on Twitter, the Cavs need to let LeVert work more often. I'm like, hold on a second.
Yeah, no.
You know, the answer is no. The answer is no on that. And this is – I'm not going to say any names on this, Mike, but this is a guy who tweets about the Cavs every game nonstop. He said, oh, we need to see LeVert needs to – I'm like, dude, you know nothing about the NBA. If you think that the answer to the Cavs problem is to let LeVert handle the ball more and get him to go to work, please, for all that is holy, I will turn gray. I will turn gray more than I'm already starting to shade a little gray. Mike, he is not the answer to our problem. If he has a good game, great, I'll take it. But we cannot rely on him to be the guy that answers all our problems, right?
LeVert's an ideal. He's a heat check guy.
He's like Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah, exactly. He's a guy who, to me, you bring him in, and within 5 minutes, you know if you're getting good Caris LeVert or not so good Caris LeVert. And if you're getting good Caris LeVert, like you did yesterday, then play him 30 minutes and he'll probably get you 20 points, but he could just as easily get you 2 points in 25 minutes if he's not going well. He just takes a lot of weird, not shots that I would necessarily want guys taking. And it feels like he doesn't finish around the rim as well as you'd like him to. And again, he's had some great games and he's been an important part of what they do. And he's definitely been a better passer distributor this season than he was in seasons past, but you still watch him and he always makes me nervous when he's going and doing things. And I just, when he shoots the ball, I don't expect it to go in. And that's not a good feeling as a fan. I think when you look at the Cavs, to me, and this is now no surprise, everybody said this going into the season, they are one complete wing player away from really being a problem for the best teams. You can't have a guy in Lamar Stevens that's starting and scoring no points and not taking a shot. I think ideally what you'd want is a guy that can defend like a Kuro, because he's still been really good defensively, but he just is giving you nothing offensively. If anything, he's gotten worse this season just because I think of his lack of confidence. And he just, every shot he takes, it feels like he hesitates, feels like he doesn't really want to take it, but he's like, there's no one within 20 feet of me. I got to take this three. And so you really need a guy who can defend the way a Kuro can defend, and somebody who can be more consistent on offense, both as a shooter. And I think they really need someone who can attack and go to the basket. Even if you could just combine Chetty and Okoro into one guy, I think you'd have something. But if you have Osman on the floor, you're giving up something defensively. And if you have Okoro on the floor, you're giving up a ton offensively, because teams just don't even guard him anymore. And he just is continuing to hesitate. And I think he's in his own head. He's a really good athlete and a really good defender, but I just think he's in his own head and he really hasn't developed the ability to shoot the ball the way the Cavs hoped. Obviously, when you draft him with the fifth pick in the draft, you hope you're going to get more production than what you've gotten out of him to this point. But going back to last night's game, you just look at it and you say, okay, Mobley played pretty well. Mitchell played pretty well. Garland didn't shoot it well. He's been a little off, I feel like, over the last couple of games. I don't feel like he's been himself. I really expected, you give him that corner three that ended the game last night, and I would feel pretty confident about him knocking that shot in. But over the last four, five, six games, it feels like he hasn't quite been at the same level that he was before. And Jared Allen had a good game. Those four guys are solid. I think they're missing one more piece. They need a really legitimate 3-and-D guy. I don't think they're going to be able to get him, because what can you really give up? I guess Love, that's where people are arguing that you give up Kevin Love and maybe you can get something for him. But
is Kevin Love going to bring back a guy who is better and more productive than Kevin Love is? Maybe you get somewhat equal value in a different position, but to me, that doesn't make any sense. And other than that, I just don't know what the Cavs, I don't know what their moves are, because what they have to give up compared to the level of player that they would want to get back, that they would need to get back in order to make a meaningful difference, it feels like that just isn't there. It just doesn't feel like that trade is out there for them.
I agree, Mike. So people just need to chill, slow their roll, let things happen, you know, and we'll see which way the cookie crumbles, Mike.
They got to get the road thing. They got to get the road thing figured out, though. They have to get it figured out. They've lost on the road. I still go back to that Clippers game where I was literally like 10 seconds away from sending you a text going, man, this team is just running roughshod over everybody. And then they collapse against the Clippers. And since then, I don't feel like they've been quite as good as they were prior to that moment. They've been fine and they've had some good games, but they've also had some stinkers. And last night, losing to San Antonio, that's a game that you got to put in the record book. I know last week we talked about how we thought they were going to do this week. And I said, you got to go 3-0 against Sacramento, Oklahoma City, and San Antonio. And instead we went 1-2. So definitely it was a disappointing week for the Cavs, and they got to figure this road stuff out.
All right. Well, here's our next four games, Mike. Led us in perfectly. We play the Mavericks in Dallas. I'm going to say that's a loss based on what I'm seeing.
I would have to guess. Yeah, that's a loss.
Okay. Friday, home against the Pacers.
That's got to be a win.
Take it a win. Saturday, home against the Mavericks again.
I got to think you're going to beat the Mavericks at home, especially if you lose the one on the road.
So we're going to split the Mavericks, okay? And then Monday, the return. The return of the guy who we traded away, not just Jordan Clarkson. We're playing the Jazz. So
I think the Jazz, that's got to be a win only because you're at home. Utah, I'm guessing.
Beat Boston, didn't they? Didn't they beat Boston yesterday?
They did. And then tonight they beat New Orleans. So
did you see what happened at the end of the Lakers Boston game, Mike?
I did not.
We've been working on it.
Well, when we started trying to podcast with all our technical difficulties tonight, I think it was like 11 o'clock and that game was in the second quarter. So,
well, the Lakers were down 20 points. They went on a 32-5 run to take a 13-point lead. And then they blew that 13-point lead and went to overtime. And now the Celtics won. Another washed up Russell. Russell W.
Another Russell with a bad contract.
LeBron played 42 minutes tonight, and AD played 45 in this game.
Well, they're due for some load management in the next one. How about that?
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds about right to me. So, anyways, you think we're going 3-1 this week, Mike? We're winning all the games at home.
I'm going to say you're going to go 3-1. Yes.
Okay, we have quite the homestand here, Mike, and it's a very important homestand coming up.
Well, listen, you've got some tough games after Utah,
Bucks, Raptors, Nets.
Well, we owe Toronto one, let's put it that way. And I got to think we're going to play Milwaukee better at home than we played them in the two games on the road. And with Brooklyn, who knows? Brooklyn's been playing really well. They've had kind of an easy schedule.
Brooklyn play on Christmas Day? They can't play on Christmas Day and then the next day, right? The NBA could not do that.
No, I don't think they – well, let's look. I don't think they put Brooklyn on Christmas Day, but that seems kind of surprising that they don't. I can't remember, but – Let's double check their schedule.
They don't play on Christmas. They do not. I just checked. Play the Bucks on the 23rd, and then they play us on the 26th.
Okay, there we go.
They're in the same holding pattern as we are. But they have to come to Cleveland on Christmas Day, probably, right?
Yeah, I would think so. Probably.
Merry Christmas. Welcome to Cleveland.
Merry Christmas,
Kyrie. Welcome back.
You could probably fly in. Right, you could probably fly. You could probably fly in that morning if you really wanted to.
they don't normally do that unless they have a game. They normally fly them in early. But anyways,
I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe they do.
We're not scheduling their travel plan. So anyways, so the Cavs, we'll see what happens this week. I'm interested to watch tomorrow. I mean, Luka is like one of my favorite players in the NBA, so I'll be watching it for sure. So we'll just have to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing, when you look at the Eastern Conference, just real quick, Brooklyn and Philadelphia both are kind of creeping back up on the Cavs. It feels like the Cavs have kind of had the stranglehold on that third spot for a while, and now 5-5 in their last 10 and not playing well on the road, and Brooklyn 8-2 and they won 4 in a row, and I know they've kind of played some pretty easy – their schedule's been relatively light, let's put it that way. And Philly got Harden back, and they're playing a little bit better now. So it feels like the Cavs have kind of let these teams back in. I still feel like – I feel pretty confident with where they are, but they got to get this road thing figured out. They really do, because you're not – I don't think there's any doubt that people – they're not going to catch the Celtics or the Bucks. Those two teams, to me, clearly are the class of the Eastern Conference. And then I think the Cavs have to be – They have to be with the mindset that we want to finish third, which I think is a realistic goal and thing that they can do. Their defense is still, I think, number one in the league, although I don't know if maybe it slipped after last night, but they've just got to get more production out of that other spot like we talked about and hold off Brooklyn and Philly, who have been playing better, and they're not going to catch Boston or Milwaukee. A disappointing loss for the Celtics the other night in Golden State, especially after coming off that loss the previous night to Utah, I believe. So the Celtics juggernaut slowed down, although, as you said, they got back on track tonight. And to me, I think the Bucks have really been playing well. You got Middleton back. They're trying to figure things out. But Milwaukee, I still think, is a team to beat. If they're healthy, I think they're better than Boston.
Yeah. Mike, yes. So one other thing, and then we're going to talk trophies here.
Okay. All right.
Fun fact for you. Phoenix is on a downward trajectory. What's going on? They're one in their last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Their last 7 games, they're 1-6, Mike.
Yeah, well, they lost 5 in a row. Well, look.
Well, listen, Ed, you know what? It's ever since Kanye West exposed CP3.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that and Devin Booker's been out. So Booker's out with that.
No, that's a minor detail, Mike.
Come on, he's only their best.
I saw someone floating it out there ever since Kanye exposed CP3. Nice.
That's funny.
So there you go.
That's funny. Yeah, but Booker's been out. And yeah, Phoenix. Well, okay, so Phoenix tonight, right? Booker's out and they lose to the Rockets. But I'm looking at the box score and I didn't get a chance to see any of this game. But DeAndre Ayton, I don't know if he went down with an injury or he just refused to talk to Monty Williams or what, but you'd figure that Ayton's probably, I don't know, at this point, he's either their second, third, fourth, I don't know where you want to put him, depending on how you still feel about the agent Chris Paul and where Bridges is. But so Ayton goes 2 for 10 in 15 minutes and scores 5 points. Mikal Bridges, 4 of 24 from the field tonight for Phoenix. So yeah, as bad as we think the Cavs are,
Kevin Porter Jr. and Ayton collided, and Ayton hurt his ankle.
Okay, tonight. All right, there you go.
So we're gonna give him a little bit of a pass, Mike.
All right, he got 10 shots up in 15 minutes, so that's not bad. Phoenix has the same problem the Cavs have. They are 4-9 away from
the friendly confines,
American Airlines Arena, or whatever. Who knows what's that place called now?
Isn't it like the hiking trail or something?
Yeah, it's a bad name. I forget what it's called, but it's a bad.
Hold on. I'm gonna find it out.
It's a bad name, whatever it is. I forget. We made fun of it last year.
What's the name of it?
It used to be America West, maybe. I feel like
the Footprint Center.
The Footprint Center, nice. I love it. That's a good one.
Looking to grow your coaching? United Basketball Plus has over 3,000 plays and 45 deep dive courses with some of the best minds in the game, including Tyler Costin, Paul Kelleher, Tobin Anderson, Dave Love, and more. You can also view their United Basketball clinics and receive 50% off in-person clinics. United Basketball Plus has partnered with Jordan and Joe's Decision for their skill development curriculum. United Basketball Plus is a one-stop shop to help you grow as a coach, leader, and culture builder. Follow the link in the show notes and use the code CLINIC to receive an annual membership for just $50.
So our last topic of the night is this ridiculous. I'm sorry. I'm going to say it right now. This is terrible.
You don't like it?
This is terrible. The renaming these trophies and then coming up with a new one. These are terrible. God awful, in my opinion. Like, why? Who asked for this to happen? That's what I want to know.
I don't think anybody asked for it, but I think it's a. I think what you're trying to do, if you're the NBA, is you are trying to give a nod to great players in the past as you recognize the great players of the present. So, look, I mean.
I'm out, Mike. I'm out on this. If they would have said they're renaming the MVP trophy after Michael Jordan, I would have been in. I would have totally been in on that one. But coming up with these ridiculous, the Jerry West trophy for the clutch player of the year. Are you serious?
Mr. Clutch, man. Come on.
That's a dumb trophy. That's a dumb award.
How are we gonna figure that out? What's the criteria for that?
Is it most clutch points? Is the person who scores the most clutch points in the last 2 minutes of a 5 point or less game? Let's see. Voted on by a media panel based on nominations from NBA head coaches, the award will honor the NBA player who comes through for his teammates in the clutch. That is the vaguest thing I've ever heard in my life. Like MVP. And naming it for Michael Jordan, I'm in on. We agree, right? And he's the person that should be named after. We're good with that one. I'm good with that one, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only other choice would have been Kareem because he has 6 and Jordan has 5. But Kareem, I know, already has the social justice championship trophy or award named after him, which I guess, I don't know. If you're Kareem, that's always been an important part of who Kareem is. So he might be somebody that would rather have his name associated with that social justice award as opposed to being bitter about not getting the MVP award, even though he has more than anybody. Clearly, yeah. I'm okay with Jordan being the statue, being the representative for the MVP. Makes sense. I don't think there's really, other than Kareem, I don't think there's even a remote chance that you would pick anybody else. And I still think, yeah, Jordan's the right choice for that trophy.
Okay, so the Jerry West trophy. First of all, your concept, like, you think this concept is a terrible one. Clutch player of the year. You think this is terrible?
I mean, I don't know if it's abjectly terrible. I don't know what the criteria is. I don't know what I'm measuring. Am I just measuring something statistically? I know that you read off what the criteria is, which is coaches are going to nominate and then media is going to vote, which means that you could go a bazillion different directions with this. I would think that ultimately what it's going to come down to is one of the top 10 players in the league, I would think, is going to win this award year in and year out because those are the guys who have the ball and coaches are going to vote and say, okay, which guys are we most afraid of in clutch time? And those are the guys who are going to end up winning. So it seems like a pretty nebulous award. And yet at the same way, there are times or there are things. And when I'm making the argument, right, that we've had this discussion a million times, Jordan versus LeBron. One of the reasons why I prefer Jordan is I feel like he's much more likely to come through in the clutch. So if you look at this award and you say, well, Michael Jordan won 10 Jerry West clutch awards and LeBron didn't win any, now you have some sort of a tangible argument to be able to put that in place. So look, I don't know what the criteria is going to be. I don't know how the coaches are going to vote. I don't know how the media is going to make their decisions, but I'm not necessarily against the concept of recognizing a guy who comes through in the clutch. I just don't know how it's going to shake out that they're going to determine who that person is. And obviously, as far as the name, Jerry West's nickname was Mr. Clutch. So I have no problem with the award being named.
I forgot the one wrinkle I wanted to introduce to you here is if we were to pick someone from the modern era to represent the trophy. So I'm talking Jordan. I'm talking 2000 cents.
Okay.
So who would it be? So who would it have to be? LeBron, right?
If you're talking about the MVP.
Yeah. Yeah.
It has to be LeBron.
Okay. I want you to hear my Mr. Clutch.
Okay.
James, I'm kidding. I'm joking.
Can we have the? I got a great award. can we have the anti-clutch award and just have Harden sitting on the bench with a towel over his head as part of the award? Or we could have like one of his shots clanging off the rim. I think that would be a really beautiful trophy that we could put out there for people to enjoy.
Okay, but who would be your modern Mr. Clutch, Mike? When you think about Dame?
Yeah, that's the first name that comes into my head of a guy who I guess, when you think about big moments, big shots, doing it repeatedly, a guy who has that reputation, I think Lillard would have to be the guy.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Okay. We're in agreement. Okay. The Defensive Player of the Year Award, they're naming it after Hakeem Olajuwon. I'm okay with this. I don't know. I mean, is there a player that you think, like, because obviously you've, like, Hakeem's probably as far back as I can go to, like, feel like I have a good handle on defense, like, greatness.
Well, historically, in the history of the game, right, the other guy that, when you think defense, the first guy that you think of probably is Bill Russell.
Yeah.
But Russell already has the finals MVP named after him, so you have to pick somebody else. So I think Olajuwon, great choice. If you talk about historically, who else might you consider? I think the only other guy, and I don't think the league would name the trophy after him, but I think Dennis Rodman probably would be the next guy for me that would come to mind. Now, I don't think the league necessarily wants Dennis Rodman being there, but
you could literally just put a worm on the picture.
Could have. I mean, you just make the trophy rainbow or something like his hair, but I think to me, if I was going to look historically, that would be the guy.
I miss Dennis Rodman. I miss every once in a while. I just go back and watch his clip from The Last Dance. Just because I want a good chuckle.
Hey, Rodman was entertaining in his own way. So do you have a guy? Do you have a modern guy? Because obviously Rodman doesn't qualify as a modern
guy. This is a guy that I don't think this is. My one student threw this name out to me, Mike. Well, we were talking about this today. Ben Wallace.
Okay, Ben, but he's not. Ben Wallace hasn't played for 10 years.
Well, no. I said past 2000.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm saying Ben Wallace. That's what he said. That's what my student said.
All right. That's fair. I mean, I think that's fair.
Past 2000. Like, I was just going past 2000. That's what I said.
Okay. I guess the guy, despite my misgivings, I would say probably Draymond is the guy that you'd say.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's a good one, too.
I think Draymond, because of the title pedigree and all that kind of thing, but you could argue that Ben Wallace won a title with the Pistons. And at his apex, he was probably as impactful as Draymond on the defensive end of the floor. So I think either one of those would be good choices. I think probably you tend to lean toward Draymond just because of the Warriors championships, but I think Ben Wallace would probably be a good choice too.
Okay. Now the rookie of the year, we're naming it after Wilt. Explain this to me. Tell me why Wilt is the person they pick here.
Well, all right. So I think what we have to do is we have to pull up Wilt's rookie
year. His rookie year, he averaged 37.6 points per game, 27 rebounds in 46 minutes per game.
Yeah. So I think that pretty much sums up why, because I would guess that's the greatest statistical rookie season in the history of the league. Hard to imagine that anybody was going to top that. I mean, look, Wilt's stats are ridiculous. So can I just, I know you probably have them in front of you too and whatever, but okay. Here's his stats from the first, whatever, 6 or 7 years of his career. Points and rebounds, 37 points, 27 rebounds a game, 38 and 27, 50 and 26, 45 and 24. 37 and 22, 35 and 22, 39 and 23, 30 and 22. So that's his first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's his first 8 years in the league. So I think it's pretty fair to say that you're not going to have any rookies get to that level again. And I'm not sure where else Wilt fits in, but I know that you know.
Oh, I have a good one for you.
What's that?
They have a trophy for a ladies' man.
All right. Well, there you go. Look, he's certainly based on his own
definition. Ben Simmons might be the candidate in the NBA current. There you go.
It's possible. It's definitely possible. So, yeah, I think, look, Wilt's a good choice just because of what he's done statistically. I mean, there's no comparison. Nobody in the NBA has put up stats the way Wilt put up stats in those first 4 years or for those first 8 years. It's just, it's ridiculous. So I don't have a problem with that. I don't, again, now you're talking about if you're trying to pick somebody else from the modern era, who's the best rookie in the last whatever. I mean, I don't know who the,
I think my answer's prop, like who made the biggest impact right out the gate, right? Like that would be who I would think of. And I think it's got to be either Luka or it's got to be Blake Griffin.
Duncan. Right? David Robinson comes back.
97-98, though. I'm guy who said after 2000.
Okay, after 2000.
I guess LeBron, I mean, I don't know. LeBron's the season. I mean, his stats weren't great his rookie year. They were good. But.
Right. Who contributed to a winning team? I'd go back even to, you look at what Magic did as a rookie in the NBA Finals. I know that's, again, pre-2000, but it's hard to, yeah, I mean.
I don't feel good about a modern one on that one. So we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, Wilt, I think if you're just looking at rookie statistics, yeah, Wilt takes it without much problem.
All right. Sixth man of the year, naming it after Havlicek. I'm okay with this one. Makes sense to me.
Part of the Celtics dynasty. Havlicek is historically underrated of how great a player he was. I don't think there's really probably a better choice.
I got a modern choice. That's pretty good. Do you want to take a guess?
Sweet Lou.
He was one I was thinking of. But the other one was Jamal Crawford.
Yeah, Crawford, a long career. I think I think back to Apex Andrew Toney for the late 70s, early 80s Sixers. It was a guy that I loved growing up. Didn't have a very long career, but he was known as the Boston Strangler. And he was a guy who just had just crazy offensive ability and could shoot it. So when I think of a six man, I think of Andrew Toney. As far as a modern guy, you know, the six man feels like it was more of a, it's kind of a concept almost. I feel like it's not even really a thing anymore just because of the way teams use their benches and how the substitution patterns work and staggering stars and all the different things that people do. So I don't know, if you look back at people who won the Sixth Man of the Year award, there's nobody really to me that leaps out that I'm like, ooh, that's a guy that might've been a better choice than what we already have. So I think I'd stick with Havlicek, and then I have a hard time coming up with who's going to be that sixth man. I think Crawford's probably a good choice just because, again, of his longevity. And he was a guy who spent the majority of his career coming off the bench.
Yep. All right, the last one, the Mikan Trophy for Most Improved Player of the Year. Once again, I guess it makes sense.
You're trying to recognize that era of the game and talking about a guy who was the greatest player of that early 50s era of the NBA. I saw somewhere, I can't remember, one of the articles that I was looking at talked about that he was the inventor/creator of the Mikan drill, and that there have been thousands upon thousands of players who have used the Mikan drill to be able to improve their skills, and that somehow tied him into becoming the representative for the Most Improved Player Trophy, which, okay, that's fine. I think it's more a nod just to the history of the game and trying to get a guy in from that era. I don't know. I guess if I was going with a modern player, I think we have two really probably great choices for this of guys who are still playing in the league who definitely exceeded the expectations of what people thought they were going to be when they came into the league, and that would be Giannis and Kawhi. Neither one of those guys was projected in any way, shape, or form to be a potential superstar player, a potential top five player in the league. And so if you want to talk about guys who got into the league and improved and got better from a modern version, to me, that discussion starts and ends with Kawhi and Giannis. But I understand why they picked Mike in and why you're not naming it, obviously, after a current player. But if we're talking about guys of recent history, to me, Kawhi and Giannis make sense here.
I agree with you. I agree with you on that. All right, Mike, I don't have anything else. Why did they rename a coach? Is the coach award already named after someone?
I think it's Red Auerbach, right? I'm pretty sure it's Red Auerbach.
Yep, it is the Red Auerbach. You're right. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, I think it's Auerbach sitting on the bench, if I'm not mistaken, is what the trophy
it is. Looks right. Like. You are good.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. I think they updated that maybe last year when they added in the Magic and Bird conference MVP trophies. I think that's when they updated the coach of the year, if I wasn't mistaken.
All right, Mike, I don't have anything else to really talk about. And I don't want to talk about the Browns.
Let's not talk about the Browns. Last NBA thing very quickly. Cade Cunningham out for the year. It looks like.
No, he is out for the year. He opted for surgery. So he's out.
Yeah, that's, man, if you're Detroit, that's a tough blow, because we talked about it going into the season that they felt like a team that could maybe overachieve if things went well and if Durin and Jaden Ivey were good players, which it looks like both of those guys are going to be hits in the draft. But when you take Cade out of that mix, I guess it's given Killian Hayes a second life, and he's kind of demonstrated that maybe he's going to have a decent NBA career. But if you're Detroit, that's just crushing that you lose a season of Cade and you lose a season of his development and his ability to develop chemistry with those guys around him that were just picked in the draft and trying to build your young team. That's something that you never want to see. And I don't know a whole lot about his injury, to be honest with you, and what the prognosis is for long-term recovery and being able to be back at full strength. But losing a season of your best player, that's tough. That's tough for Detroit, and well, puts them down in the Wembanyama sweepstakes, which I think ultimately probably for all those teams at the bottom, long term, that's probably the best thing anyway. So I guess maybe it's a blessing in disguise, but you still don't want to see a guy who's a cornerstone of your franchise go down with a leg injury that who knows what the potential ramifications are of that going forward. So feel bad for Detroit fans and for Cade.
Yeah. All right, Mike, I actually do have one question for you. I want you to make a prediction.
Okay.
Are you up to date on Survivor?
I am not.
Oh my God.
I'm not. Seriously? because I'm waiting. My daughter's coming home from college next week. And so we all just decided to postpone and watch when she gets back. And so we're going to watch together when she's home. So I can't play.
Oh, dang it.
Can't play. Sorry.
I wanted you to predict who was going to win tomorrow.
Got nothing, man. I can't play.
Well, I won't say anything. Darn it.
All right. Well, let's leave it there. Okay. Well, despite all of our many, 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 many technical difficulties and the fact that I need some new internet service and we may need a new podcast platform, we made it through somehow. And hopefully when you listen to this, it will sound as if we knew what we were doing, but we will see what the miracles of editing starting at 1:10 a.m. will be.
How's that chair, Mike? How's that chair?
Feeling pretty comfortable. I'm feeling pretty awake right now. We'll see. We shall see how that goes.
Well, I'm just glad I broke my own rule tonight, Mike. I drank a Mountain Dew while I was coaching tonight.
All right.
I needed some energy.
You had to get some energy?
I needed some energy tonight.
Did you get a win?
No, it was close.
All right.
We did not pull out the W. We lost to a team we beat, and we might end up playing them in the first round of the playoffs. So it's actually better, in my opinion, that we got the loss out of the way now, right? Because
there you go. The third time. Well, you can bounce back and try to get a win in the playoffs. Well, the Clemson family went 2-0 today, so that was good. We had two big routes, so that was good. I got to
a productive night.
Productive night. I left school and went and saw my daughter play, and then left her game and stopped and got some Subway along the way, and went to my son's game. And
what's your choice? What's your Subway of choice, Mike?
What's my sandwich?
Yeah,
turkey, provolone, lettuce, spinach, and ranch.
Well, let me tell you, I used to work at Subway. I don't know if you know that about me.
No, I only know you as an Arby's employee.
I was a Subway employee before. Oops, I was a Subway employee before I was at Arby's, and I've been getting the same sandwich since I was working at Subway.
All right, what's your go-to?
Well, here's the funny story. They just eliminated my sandwich after 18 years, and I no longer have my sandwich. It was a roasted chicken breast sandwich with lettuce, tomato, extra pickle, and mayo, provolone cheese, roasted chicken breast, gone, off the menu, kaput. Uh-oh. Peace out. So Subway, much like Steak and Shake, you are on my ish list, and I will not be patronizing you anymore.
Okay, so do you, when you go to a sandwich place, do you always get the same exact sandwich at whatever place you go to?
Same exact thing every single time.
Yeah, that's what I do too.
I am a creature of habit.
Yeah, I do the same.
Anywhere that I go, Mike, I get the same thing. McDonald's, yeah, so I used to be a Big Mac guy, but now that it's so expensive, like, I'll just get a regular hamburger and that'll suffice.
Okay.
I go to Taco Bell, I get the same thing I get anytime. I know don't frequent these establishments as much as I do. Chipotle, I've been ordering the same burrito at Chipotle the same exact way since I was in high school when they opened that Chipotle on Lund Road and Pearl Road.
There you go.
Twice a week at school, I order the same thing every time. I am a creature of habit.
Yeah, I do the same. Anybody who knows me knows I have lots of weird food habits. Like, I eat Cheerios for breakfast every morning. I eat peanut butter and jelly every day for lunch. So, and then whenever I go to a restaurant, typically I get the exact same thing.
I'm a peanut butter and jelly, I would say 70% of the time. The other 30% of the time is leftovers.
I look at it like Steve Jobs wearing the black turtleneck and black jeans or whatever he used to wear, that just takes the decision making out. I never am worried about, hey, what am I going to have for lunch tomorrow? It's just, I'm making my peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and throwing them in the bag and ready to go. So makes things easy. All right. Well, people have heard enough about our eating habits.
Never mind. I'm not going to go there. I had something else. I don't want to, we'll talk some other time about this. I was going to bring the dad joke back, but we don't need to do that right now.
All right. Yeah. We had a nice little segment going, but we just, I don't know, somehow we dropped the ball on that. We'll have to come up with another interesting segment. We got wind shares going right now. We'll have to come up with something new.
Wind shares we've done, let's see, I've got the list here, Mike. I've been keeping a list so I don't repeat.
We got six teams. Maybe. I feel like we've done like six, maybe five.
Yeah. We've done something like that. We've done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Good job, Mike.
All right. So
we got 24 more to go. So,
all right. Well, there you go. We got 24 weeks to be able to come up with a new concept, a new segment. So, hey, if anybody's out there listening, you want to tweet at us or send us an email with the segment that you're interested in hearing, go ahead and do that. We'd appreciate it. In the meantime, it is now 1:13 a.m.
We've got 10 more minutes after we were about to wrap.
Yeah. We wanted to talk food and segments. So nonetheless, we appreciate you checking out this week's NBA episode of the Hoopheads Pod. Coming up on Friday, we have a new roundtable where our coaches talk about what makes a player stand out to college coaches if they're trying to get recruited. Interesting episode. We had a lot of coaches weigh in on that one, so it's going to be a lot of fun for you to check that one out. Please make sure you do so. Make sure you subscribe to the Hoopheads Pod. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Hoopheads Pod. And we appreciate you being a loyal listener, hanging out all the way to the end of this episode.
Subway talk.
Yep. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.